Hello, this is Daniel Gregory. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Perceptive Photographer Podcast, our 276th episode. Hope you are doing well and having a good week. I know that for a lot of people, it's still a pretty stressful time, so hopefully you're able to find some peace and solace in your creative practice and that you're able to take care of your family and community as you need to. So a long time ago, many, many, many months ago, we used to be able to go to the movie theaters, and we used to actually go and sit, gather as a group of people and watch movies. One of the traditions I always like to partake of, and I know it's expensive and I know it's crazy, but I always love to get a little treat when I go to the movies. So I'd go up to the concession stand and spend an exorbitant amount of money to buy myself a little treat. Luckily, though, for me, in the town I live in, the town of Lang, we have a great little theater called the Clyde Theater. And in there, you can still actually get candy for about $1.50. So while the movie's $5, $7, depending on your age, you can still get a candy for $1, $1.50, $2. So unlike having to be at a big movie theater where you're paying $9,000 for a candy bar, you can actually get them relatively cheap at the local theater. When I'm picking out my own candy, I always kind of select into a couple of options. So it's not super hard for me to choose because over the years, I've kind of refined my palate. I like a small little bag of popcorn, and then I like either to get Junior Mints or maybe I'll get Skittles or peanut M&Ms, maybe some Red Vines. Occasionally, you know, just mix it up a little bit. But I'm always amazed when I watch people go up to the counter when I'm at the movie theater and they're having to select the kind of candy they want to take into the theater. There's so many choices now with so many different varieties of candy that I think a lot of people get overwhelmed. They get to where they look at that counter and they think to themselves, well, do I want something a little tart? Do I want something a little sweet? Do I want something chewy? Do I want something crunchy? All of those different options start to come into play, and it makes it really, really hard sometimes to actually select the candy you want. That results in people behind you in line telling you, well, how hard is it to actually pick out a candy bar until they get to the front of the line, and then it takes them just as long. So as we start to look at those choices, we start to deal with how do we go about that selection process? How do we make that decision on what to pick? One of the interesting things is when people are given more choices, they will more likely not make a decision because the number of choices becomes overwhelming. There's been a number of studies done on this in psychology and sociology over the years where when given an infinite number of choices to purchase something, the person won't make a decision. So if I give you 25 jams to taste and then ask you to buy one, you're overwhelmed with the decision of which one to purchase and you won't make the purchase. But if I let you select and taste maybe 2 jams or 3 jams, you then have to pick which one you'd want to purchase from that smaller subset. So how does this relate to the photography? Well, it's not that far of a stretch to think about how we go about making our decisions as photographers as a series of choices. We make a decision all the time about what to include in a frame, what camera to shoot, what location to go to, what settings we want to use. Then we get the image imported. We make the decision of which ones we're going to cull through. We have to make editing decisions. Everything is about making these choices. What do we do and when do we do it? Today, while it's taken me now about 3.5 minutes to get to my point, what I wanted to talk to today was some of that process of that choice decision-making. How do we make the choice of what to work on, when to work on, and how to work on it? Because I think similar to buying candy, it can get overwhelming when there's too many choices. This is one of the reasons why when working on our photography, when working on our creative practice, one of the things that we have to start to do is narrow down the number of images we work with. A lot of seeing, a lot of the art and craft is seeing what's in front of you. Making the decision about when to pull the trigger is about a natural selection of what's important to you. It's about getting that frame right. And once you find the subject and subject matter that's interesting to you, we can tighten that down and make a really good restriction on that to limit the number of photographs we have. One of the easiest ways to make the editing culling process easier is to come home with 50 photographs instead of 500 photographs. As we make all of those images, if you have 500 photographs to go through, you now have to make 500 decisions to say whether this photograph makes the cut to the next round or not. And for a lot of people, they make multiple rounds of cuts. So not is it a matter of just, I got some 500. They go from 500 to 100, from 100 to 50, from 50 to 25, 25 to 5, or 25 to 10, whatever that number is. You have to make that culling decision so many times. Where if you only had 50 photographs to start with, it'd be a lot easier for you to make that decision. The same thing happens in the decision we make, in the choices we make around editing. Once we've decided on the photograph we actually want to edit, we're back to the candy counter again. Because now, because of the way we process images, whether you're working in analog, digital, or a hybrid methodology, there is an infinite number of options you have for how to treat and process that photograph. And part of the process of learning again to see, learning again to understand what your photograph is about narrowing those choices down. It's about making sure that rather than moving from an infinite number of options with the sliders and an infinite number of options in the darkroom, that we move to a finite decision of what tool to apply and how much to get the look and the feel and the aesthetic and the narrative I want within the photograph. So again, by walking up and making some simple candy-like decisions, do I want something to be sweet or savory? Crunchy or squishy? I guess squishy, gooey, chewy. There we go. Crunchy or chewy? What do we do within that process to make the decision for how we want the photograph to be? Because once we decide we want the photograph to be hypersaturated, the decision for color is already set at that point. Now, color relationships may not be, but the decision of the vibrancy and punch of that color has been decided. That's the equivalent of making the decision to make something chewy versus crunchy. However you approach your photography, however you approach that editing process, once we start to narrow the decision down and we start to put that constraint on there, the choices become a lot easier because the other things that come with choices is they become informative of the next choice. So for example, if I decide to process an image into black and white, I no longer have to worry about color relationships. The thought and the worry about color and what does color mean, how is color applied, all goes out the door. The only thing in the digital space that the color becomes useful for is tonal separation. So I need some awareness of color to separate tone, but the decision about the aesthetic of the photograph, the feel, the look, the quality, the nature of the photograph is constrained at that point based on the decision to go to black and white. So again, culling down less photographs, making a decision about the aesthetic choice makes that in fact a lot easier. Now, here's the other thing about choice that I think is important for people to grapple with and to process and think about is that there are very few choices that you can't recover from. As you're working on a photograph, rarely are you going to get yourself pinned to a point where you can't reinterpret, reimagine, redefine, and re-choose the options you want. It's one of the reasons we speak so much about a non-destructive workflow. It's one of the reasons why as you get better as a photographer, returning to some of your older images becomes valuable because the choices you'll make today, the choices you'd make as the photographer you are today might be informative in how to reprocess, reimagine, and reinterpret some of your work that you weren't quite ready for 6 months ago, a year ago, 5 years ago, whenever you took the photograph. So that nature of returning to old work, I think is significant and important. That choice to come back, that choice to re-examine, and knowing that you're not stuck within one spot is, again, analogous to the candy counter. If you decide when you go see a movie to select Junior Mints, and the next time you come to the movie theater and you choose Red Vines, it's because you're able to choose something different. You're not pinned that moment of making the decision that this is the one candy you're going to spend the rest of your life with. It's not your desert island candy. This is just the candy of the moment for the movie you're in. And maybe you're one of those people who has rom-com candy, you have action picture candies, you have documentary candies, you have a different kind of candy for a different sort of experience. Your editing is the same way. Don't allow yourself to get trapped into a choice you made or a choice you thought you were supposed to make with a given photograph. One of the biggest things I got out of my photography that has applied to my life is that decision that I'm not pinned by that choice. As soon as I realized that a photograph that I edited a certain way a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I can reinterpret, reimagine, and reconstitute and recreate as something different today is hugely empowering. It allows me to take my photography as a metaphor for my life and say, there are decisions and choices and things that happened years ago that I can respond to differently today. I can reimagine and reinterpret and reprocess that information and not Pollyanna rose-colored glasses pretend that it didn't happen, but I can use that information, use that knowledge in a much more constructive way today. It can empower me to make better decisions going forward. So as I look back at a photograph that, wow, you know, I really didn't edit it that well years ago. Maybe I re-edited it today and I like it better because I made better choices today. So as you learn and as you process and as you grow as a photographer, you're able to come in and grow and process and edit your sophistication of your eye and the way you see, the way you think about your photography. And that comes from the ability to understand how those choices are derived. The last piece around choice, kind of related again to the candy counter, that I think is an interesting one, and I see this a lot with kids, a lot more than I do with adults. But I watch kids buy candy and they think about the candy combination. So they think about what would it be like to eat a Sour Patch Kid and a chocolate M&M, a peanut M&M at the same time. And they buy candy based on this amalgamation of mixing things together that as adults we would think probably shouldn't be put together. And I think that's one of the other things about choice that's interesting is sometimes what we can do is take two disparate choices and put them together into a new combination we hadn't imagined before. And so maybe sometimes making a decision about choosing something you wouldn't normally choose and then choosing the thing you would always choose and putting those together in your creative practice and your photography might be interesting. It might prove to be something that creates a certain aesthetic, a certain style, a certain look that becomes interesting. I found that in my own process, my own platinum printing work, that I had seen a technique of doing color and black and white. The black of the color photograph is platinum. So you're basically taking a black and white platinum print and you're overcoating that over a color image. I had seen that done a few times, but it would never have occurred to me to actually do that had I not seen it. The implementation of that became interesting for me about, hey, how do I apply blacks and colors and things like that together to constitute the photograph? And it created a different way of my sensibility of approaching my printing. The notion of what constitutes a black in a photograph, what constitutes the black tones and values in a photograph, and how dark should they be, how light should they be, how rich should they be, what is the variation within there? Because up to that point, I had been constrained by the notion of photo black and matte black inks defining the aesthetic and the look of that. But once I realized that I have a lot of flexibility in deciding what that looks like in my own photographs because of what I saw with the platinum blacks created with the color photograph and experimenting with that, it gave me a new kind of sense of freedom to play with what I thought the print should look like. So by selecting a different choice, making a little bit different decision, I ended up with being able to experiment and play in a way I hadn't anticipated before. As you think about your own photography, as you think about some of the choices you're making, recognizing that choice is something we select into. It's a decision we make based on the variables in front of us. And sometimes we make good choices. Sometimes we make bad choices. But we always end up making a decision. We always end up making a choice, even if the choice is to do nothing. And sometimes nothing is the worst choice we can make. Because if you're doing nothing, you're editing nothing, you're creating nothing, you're not actually making your photographs. So at some point, we have to make the choice to do something. And then rather than be overwhelmed by the decision to make too many options, too many choices, sometimes we need to spend that extra little bit of energy to think ahead of time about what are we in the mood for. Like I said, whether it's savory or sweet, little buckets like that can make the decision of what we want to process and what we want to create that much easier. As you look at your own photography, and as you hopefully, maybe one day, go back to the movies, think about how you select your candy. Think about how you make decisions and choices in your life and see if there is something relatable to your own work. Maybe you'll find a new pattern, a new process, something else you get to do, or maybe you just get to try a candy you've never tried before. Who knows? I hope you have a great and amazing week. Hope you have a great month. I hope you remember to give yourself the respite you need to keep your batteries recharged. And even if you just take a few minutes out of your day to sketch, draw, make a quick snapshot of a photograph, just appreciate the joy and presence that creativity gives us, and the message and the things we can communicate through our art are so powerful and so impactful that I hope that you find a way to provide that message to somebody as you can. That's actually going to be our topic for next week's podcast. We're really going to look at the power and the medium of photography as a way of communicating. And so we'll talk about that next week. Don't forget, you can always find us upon any of the podcast platforms. A review up there helps other people find the podcast. If you appreciate the podcast, love a review up there. Thanks again for listening. Have a great week and take care.